From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. When Elizabeth Banks caught wind that creative duo Phil Lord and Christopher Miller were searching for a director to make a movie titled Cocaine Bear, she heard the call of destiny.
I read the script in April 2020. There was fires all over LA. Like, the world was so chaotic. And I remember thinking, wow, no greater metaphor for the chaos all around us than a bear high in cocaine.
Cocaine Bear director Elizabeth Banks talks about the risks of releasing a raunchy R-rated comedy in theaters, working with the late actor Ray Liotta on one of his last films, and how she dealt with the failure of her 2019 Charlie's Angels remake. But first we banter. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So let me begin by talking about Lachlan Murdoch and the Fox News scandal that has been revealed through this lawsuit brought by the people who make the Dominion voting machines, which were cited as part of some big conspiracy to steal the election from Trump. And as you know, Matt, lots of internal communications from Fox have become public through this litigation. And it is clear that everybody from top to bottom knew that the election wasn't stolen from Trump, and they perpetuated this story. So this has been a gigantic media scandal. I'm just going to note this Lachlan Murdoch quote at this Morgan Stanley conference this week. He says, "I think a lot of the noise that you hear about this case is not actually about the law, and it's not about journalism. It's really about the politics, right?" And that's unfortunately more reflective of that sort of polarized society that we live in today. And I just would like to enter this under the category of what is chutzpah? Because if we have a hugely polarized society, the Fox News hosts who were making fun of the story that the election was stolen, and in Tucker Carlson's case saying that he hates Trump with a passion, then went on the air and perpetuated the story.
Yeah, I mean, that's BS. But you know what? Are you surprised? Like, this is sort of what Fox News does, and this is how the Murdochs have justified this channel for 25 years now. I mean, it defined itself in opposition to what it sees as the liberal media, and it has used the cover of that opposition to create this monster that we are now seeing is a monster that they don't even believe in themselves. Rupert was saying things like, this is crazy, this is nuts. And these hosts were going on the air every night spouting this BS. And it's not at all surprising to me that this would be a comment from Lachlan, because that's what he thinks. He thinks that they are justified in putting this product out there because everything in the media is one side and they are the other.
Well, the side of fabrication. But I will just say that with this litigation, I mean, yes, am I surprised? I'm not surprised because, you know, we've seen in the past when Tucker Carlson got into trouble for other irresponsible comments and the lawyers from Fox said, well, you know, he's really an entertainer, not a journalist. We've seen that line. But this is in the context of a lawsuit that many First Amendment lawyers believe that Fox will lose. I would think that dialing it down and not acting like Fox is the innocent victim might be a smart idea.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing Lachlan is correct on is that Dominion is the plaintiff here. American democracy or the general Trump stuff, that is not the issue. The issue in the case, the legal issue, is whether there were false things said about Dominion, whether Fox News knew they were false, and whether they did it with malice or whether they did it with reckless disregard for the truth. That is the case. Now, all of this is good evidence that swarms around it and sort of shows the mindset, but the legal case doesn't hinge on whether Tucker Carlson thinks that Trump is a moron or whether he hates him.
No, but the big lie that the election was stolen, it's all connected. And if you perpetuate the big lie, you're right adjacent to the Dominion situation. So we will leave that to the courts for now and the dueling lawyers. But let me turn to our friend Ari Emanuel. He, too, spoke at the same conference that Lachlan Murdoch appeared at. And he said to people who might be concerned, you know, Endeavor's a public company and they are courting investors, that even though Hollywood is going through some things now, don't worry, because the big stars like Marty Scorsese and Mark Wahlberg and Keanu Reeves, they're going to still make all the money. Don't worry about it. They'll get paid. Of course, when you read that, you think, Yes, they'll get paid, but is this something that should cause investors to think there's no potential problem for the agencies, including the one that belongs to Endeavor?
Yeah, I mean, Ari is doing a little bit of a two-step here because, sure, I mean, you're The Rock, you are Martin Scorsese. Like, these guys get paid. The upper echelon of talent is always going to get paid. But unfortunately, there are thousands of other clients at WME and elsewhere in Hollywood that are going to be squeezed by what all signs point to is a contraction in the business. And it was a very interesting juxtaposition between what Ari was talking about. And then later the next day, Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, gets up there and says, yeah, we're going to be spending less on film, less on television. We are going to be judicious and we're going to be spending less. That necessarily means less money on talent.
Yes, you would think that would be obvious. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, a founding partner of Puck News. In the 5 years since she last joined us on the show, Elizabeth Banks has acted in films including the 2022 abortion drama Call Jane and starred in the FX miniseries Mrs. America. She also executive produces and hosts the ABC game show Press Your Luck. The mother of two boys, Banks runs a production company with her husband Max Handelman, and she's just directed her third film. Cocaine Bear is very loosely based on the true story of a bear who died after ingesting a whole lot of cocaine that a drug dealer had dumped from a plane in 1985. As you'll hear, Banks thinks of the film as a redemption story for the bear who gets to star in a full-throttle horror comedy. In one scene early in the film, two European hikers, played by Game of Thrones actor Christopher Heavey and Hannah Hoekstra, spot the bear acting erratically in the distance.
What'd you see? It's demented. I think we should leave it. It's something wrong with it. Come on, come on. Shh, come on.
So cute. Oh, there's nothing to be afraid of, Christopher.
I'm not afraid, Exa.
Oh, sweetie, no, of course not.
Let us discuss this title for a moment. I've seen conflicting information because I think Donna Langley was nervous naming it Cocaine Bear. She said it's going to be restricted from certain avenues of marketing that we ordinarily might use. I read something else saying it was always the name, I guess in some people's minds, but how did you get Donna Langley, who runs the studio?
Yeah. It was a conversation in the beginning. It was always the title on the cover page of the script. And I loved the title. And I had conversations mostly with marketing, with Michael Moses, who's a friend and such a great supporter of mine. And I said, listen, can you do your due diligence now? Can I know before we get started if we're going to be able to use the title? And to their credit, you know, it's really him that convinced Donna. That
oh, really?
I think so. I mean, I don't know the behind the scenes of exactly how that went down. But he said yes to me and gave me the confidence that they were going to stick with the title, despite the fact that it did have some limitations. But I mean, there's billboards all over Sunset Boulevard. So I think it is okay. It ultimately worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw some alternative idea of Pablo Escobar that you were calling the bear. But I don't know if that was ever even considered obscure title.
Pablo Escobar is the name that was given to a taxidermied bear in Kentucky. It may or may not be the actual cocaine bear, as it turns out, but that's a name that these Kentucky guys gave to their bear.
That it may or may not have been actually the bear that ate the cocaine, right?
That's right.
One of the curveballs in reading about this was that Waylon Jennings had bought that bear thinking it was the bear. Is that something?
I have heard that tale as well, but I don't know how much stock to put in that tale.
We don't know. There is so much mythology around this poor bear that actually died in real life and just poisoned itself. It's so sad.
Yeah.
But it's not like that in the movie. You changed everything in gender and motives. You gave the bear, what's my motive?
Well, I felt badly that original bear had OD'd. You know, it was such this like collateral damage almost in this situation. It felt awful to me. And when I read the script, I thought, oh, this is the redemption story for that bear. I see. This is the vengeance movie. This is great. Okay. Because of course we want, at the end of the day, Cocaine Bear's the titular character and should be the hero.
So this all started with this writer, Jimmy Warden. He stumbled on the story of the bear. He writes the spec script. He gives it to Lord and Miller, who then take it to Donna Langley because they have a deal at Universal. And you get it and you immediately want to do it.
Pretty much. I mean, they were developing it with maybe even a couple other ideas for directors they had. And I don't think anyone thought, you know, let's call Liz Banks. I heard that it was something that they were interested in doing, and my agent sent it to me sort of slyly, honestly, and said, I think you would really like this. And, you know, he knows I love Lord and Miller and know them well and know their sensibility. And I read the script and it was April 2020. There was fires all over LA. Like the world was so chaotic. And I remember thinking, wow, no greater metaphor for the chaos all around us than a bear high in cocaine. And wow, there really was something almost cathartic in getting to the end of the script and going, whoo, it was like you couldn't breathe the whole time you're reading it. And then you just like at the end, you just let out a deep breath and, you know, everything seemed right with the world again. And that was the energy. It was just very exciting. It was what I wanted to see in a theater during a pandemic, you know, when I thought, are we ever going to be connected again? Will we ever get to go to movies again? And I thought, well, if we do, this is what I'd like to see.
Yeah, I think we've talked about before the difficulty of breaking into doing these action movies. I think you said, I'm quoting you, there are still executives in Hollywood who are like, I don't know if women can do technical stuff. There are literally people who are like, women don't like math. Now, I am bad for the cause because I am terrible at math and really hate it. But
I think women are told that we're bad at math and we all believe it. I don't know if you're actually bad at math, Kim.
You know, something, it goes back to fourth grade when I had a psychotic teacher who for some reason felt like she should tell the class that we should have used nuclear weapons on North Vietnam.
Oh my goodness.
Then she said I was bad at
math. Mine goes back to fifth grade when we would play girls versus boys in math nearly every day and the boys always won. So the girls just assumed, well, I guess terrible. We're bad at math.
Yeah, terrible. That's terrible. Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, Donna Langley is one of the bold and basically, I think, we're almost at almost no women at the top of the ladder in movies, but she is the one who gave you the chance. So I suppose that might Absolutely. Not be a coincidence, right? Or an accident.
I mean, I think, first of all, she's a champion of it for sure. I think Universal, when you look around at who's hiring women to direct, Universal has a pretty good track record in comparison to the other studios. And I don't like to speak for her. I'll just say she's always been very supportive of me and I find her truly inspirational. And the fact that she's willing to back these really interesting ideas for movies, I think is paying off. And it's really fun to be sort of in her orbit.
Yeah, she certainly speaks very well for herself. The R-rated kind of raunchy movie has been battered lately. Did that give you any pause? I just wondered.
You know, I felt like this was an opportunity to do something really unique in that there was a lot of comedy in the script that I read, and I knew I could pull even, you know, more comedy out of this thing. But comedies are not what people are making. They're not what, you know, to my chagrin. And I knew that I could hide the comedy inside of a genre picture. And I knew that genre pictures were things that people maybe would go see in a theater. Mm. I know I like to see them in the theater. Yeah. So the horror and the gore of this movie, that's what really excited me. You know, I was part of a mixed genre horror comedy called Slither, directed by James Gunn back in the day for Universal. And, you know, it didn't do that well. It was like really hard, I think, for people to sort of go, wait, what is this thing? Is it supposed to be scary? Is it supposed to be funny? And so I was a little wary of walking that line, but I knew that if we could just create inside the movie the sense of chaos that the bear represented, that the title represented, that the ride was for theatergoers, you know, the comedy really came second to me. It was all about making something that was truly entertaining, gory, jump scary, you know, horrific, if you will. I really leaned into the genre stuff first. The comedy came. It was all part of it, but I didn't want to make a comedy, if you will. It ended up being really funny, though.
Yes, there were laughs in the movie, I can attest. Now, talk about the gore, because I read you cut it back a little once you saw the first cut, but not too much. I also read that you looked into what actually happens when animals attack, and you advise people not to Google that.
I do advise people not to Google that. Well, I mean, unless you are really excited by seeing limbs not in their correct places. There are bear attacks, not a lot of black bears. I just want to say, I don't want to give black bears a bad rap, because there's actually a lot of black bears in the 48 contiguous United States.
So what was too much? How did you know?
I'll be honest with you, I didn't really think anything was too much, because I find it all to be super fun and funny and exciting. However, in the third act of the film, I did start to pull back on a couple things here and there, because I just felt like I wanted the audience in a more emotional place at that point in the movie. Like, they've been through a lot. We've seen a lot of blood. We've seen a lot of attacks and crazy things happen. And in the third act, I felt like I should take a little of that stuff out, because I think anybody who came for that got what they wanted. And now I really wanted the audience to sit a little bit more with the characters and in the emotional life of what's going on, so that we could bring it to a satisfying conclusion.
Coming up after the break, Elizabeth Banks talks about the joys and sorrows of getting a role in the 2000 remake of Shaft. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Elizabeth Banks has been working in Hollywood long enough to understand that things don't always go according to plan. After finding success as the director of Pitch Perfect 2, she faced disappointment with the box office performance of her 2019 Charlie's Angels reboot. Universal's Donna Langley gave Banks another shot with the horror comedy Cocaine Bear, which has brought in $52 million so far against an estimated $30 million budget. In one of the movie's over-the-top sequences, an EMT and a park ranger attempt to escape the drug-addled bear in an ambulance. To set the tone, the high-speed chase is set to the tune of Depeche Mode's I Just Can't Get Enough, as indeed, the bear cannot.
What the hell have you got a gun for?
Hey, ma'am!
Point that away! Shoot it! Shoot it!
Much of Cocaine Bear's production costs went toward creating a photoreal CGI bear, crafted by Peter Jackson's New Zealand special effects company, Weta FX. You didn't have an actual trained bear on set to attack a fake attack. You had a guy named Alan Henry, an actor. He, I guess, trained with Andy Serkis, who's the original Gollum and amazing motion cap actor and regular actor. So then he comes on the set and he's wearing like bear prosthetics.
He mostly wore like a black unitard, and he walked on all fours as a quadruped on prosthetic arms, like we added limbs basically to his arms so that he could more easily replicate like a bear's size and how a bear would walk. And then we fitted him with a prosthetic piece that was like a longer neck piece that came out over his head and had a bear snout on it and had the bear's eyeballs where the eyes would actually be. So he was there to sort of represent the bear in frame. So we had something to frame up on. We had something for the actors to react to. And he's also a stunt person. So he actually could then get into it with the actors when the actors were interacting with our bear. He could throw people around. He could dance with Alden Ehrenreich, which is something that happens in the film. So he was super necessary to the process. And that process was all laid out very early on with Weta Workshop and Weta Digital, who created our bear and a lot of our prosthetics.
They're in New Zealand. That's Peter Jackson.
In New Zealand, yes. And they created the original Gollum. They created Caesar from Planet of the Apes. You know, and now I think they've done Cocaine Bear. I think this is going to go right up to number one as as Weta's favorite character.
The peak of their existence.
That's right.
You shot in Ireland, which was for Southern United States. I'm imagining people might wonder why.
A great tax incentive.
I was going to say, could it be a great tax incentive?
It could be, it was a delightful place to go. We actually got really lucky. It's so interesting because Ireland is, of course, known for rain. And the summer that we shot in Ireland in 21, there were a bunch of hurricanes actually in the Southern United States. So if we had actually shot the movie where it takes place in Georgia, I think it would have rained on us nearly every day. And so we actually got really lucky going to Ireland. It was a great stand-in for Georgia. And it was a great place for us all to sort of gather, you know, in the pandemic and run around the woods together. We were just south of Dublin and we would go into Dublin and there was no indoor dining while we were there. So at night we would go sit out on sidewalks wrapped in coats and blankets and eat like cold dinners on the street together. But at least we were together, you know?
You were together, yeah. And you could shoot. I mean, I'm trying to visualize this guy running around saying, I'm a bear. But I don't know whether the actors just go into the belief, you know, as actors must do, that that is a bear, or whether people were just cracking up.
You know, they were very committed, these actors. I mean, they really got it. We had also a big bear head that was our lighting reference for our bear that had real fur on it, that has the bear's like real texture and all that, that was also made by Weta, that helps them then understand and us how, you know, what the framing of the bear was, what the lighting looks like on the bear. And that really helped our actors. It was like, oh, that's right. That's what a bear looks like. That's how big its mouth is compared to mine. That's how big its, you know, eyes are, its ears. And we also had a lot of videos. So we showed people like, look, this is what this would look like, or this is how a bear might be acting. And then people just go for it. You know, I mean, actors nowadays, we're all used to acting with green screens and balls on sticks. And so I actually think we gave actors more than they thought they were going to get.
I will note that this was Ray Liotta's last credited role, I think, on your movie. That must have been something to contend with when he passed away, and it kind of out of the blue, it felt like.
Totally out of the blue. I saw him 8 days before he passed away. He came to do ADR. He drove himself. He was early. He got to see the bears and all of his scenes. He did his ADR as joyfully as he had participated in the whole process of this movie. And he was excited to go to the Dominican Republic, where he ultimately passed away. And, you know, we hugged and he was a delight. So I had a really special bond with Ray. I thought he was so charming. He totally got the tone of this movie. And he was such a gift to me. I'm forever grateful that he came to play with us.
Special memory. You have been so insanely busy. I don't even know how you manage. You have a production company with your husband, Max Handelman. You were hosting a game show. On the list of things that you've been doing, I guess why this movie was in post, it's a lot. I don't know. How do you even manage to do all of these things? I mean, you did Press Your Luck on ABC. You became co-owner and chief creative officer of a wine company called Archer
Canned
Roos.
Archer Roos, that's right. Canned wine. I love it.
You made Call Jane, a docudrama about abortion rights, right? Like that, I'm just looking at this list and saying, how is this even possible?
I like being busy, Kim. I've been working since I was 12 years old. As I say to my kids, you got to get up every day and do something useful. It's like my internal engine. It's how I operate. And I love making things. You know, I'm a creative person. I'm an artist. This is like, it's what, you know, I've devoted, you know, 25 years to this career. And I definitely use the power of no. I don't want anyone to think I'm just willy-nilly running through town doing everything that comes my way. I am trying to be really deliberate in what I work on all the time. And I'm loving these opportunities and, you know, making this bear. Honestly, a big part of this project here for Cocaine Bear, and we worked on the CGI with Weta for, I think it was 2 years and 17 days.
Wow.
It took to sort of go from beginning to end of like every shot in the movie was done. And, you know, in that time period, like I don't have to go create the bear. I'm not, you know, the animator working in New Zealand. I get to rely on, you know, those incredible artisans to do that work while I very luckily get to, you know, have my side gigs as an actress every once in a while.
How do you divvy it up with your husband?
He does a lot of development with the company and our, we have a film exec named Allison Small and a TV exec named Chrissy Wall. And they do tons, you know, I have great help. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I have great help with my family. I have great help with my husband. I have great help with my team at Brownstone. And that's how I do it. I mean, I'm very well supported and very lucky that I have such great people in my life.
Yes, that is lucky. And that's a good thing. So by the time we air this, we will know how Cocaine Bear landed. going back to maybe a painful memory of Charlie's Angels, that one didn't work. If this one works, it's like we just say, yay. How will you process it and deal with it if it doesn't work?
Oh, gosh. I mean, here's the thing. You can only make the thing. There's only so much control I have. And I recommend to everyone to try not to control the things you can't control.
Good plan.
And not worry about the things you can't control, right? That's like the number one thing they tell you in a therapy session. I did the thing. I love the film. I love the actors. I love the experience of making it. I learned a long time ago. I remember with the very first, I can't even remember what it was. One of the very first things I did, maybe it was Shaft or something. I remember like getting a bunch of friends. I remember my parents. We all went to the theater to see that movie. And there's like two shots of me in the movie. And I'm like clapping or something, you know, I don't even speak.
I did not know that you were in that movie.
I am in Shaft. It was one of my first credits. I worked on it for well over a week. We did night shoots in New York City, had the best time and got to watch John Singleton work, got to watch Samuel L. Jackson work, got to, you know, be dressed by Ruth Carter, the incredible costume designer.
Yeah.
And, you know, so just an incredible experience. And then I'm in the movie for like literally 5 seconds. And I remember being in the theater thing is being so disappointed and just like, oh my gosh, like this is how it goes. Like you can just, everything can just be, you know, it can mean nothing. And I learned then, like the point of this business is like doing the job itself. That was the great experience. And if people get to see the work and also get excited by it or moved by it or entertained by it or whatever it is, that's, you know, that's the cherry on top, but you can't count on it. Don't count on it.
It works. This is a tough business. You know, I don't know how people handle that constant rejection. And
I warn people all the time. It's, you never know what's going to happen. You can't control the audience. I mean, we had a global pandemic. One day we were going to the movies and the next day we weren't. I just have given up all control over all of those things. And I just love doing the work. That's what I take pride in. That's what keeps me going, is the relationships with the actors and the crew and getting to make things and collaborate. That's the best part of this job. Everything else is, you know, out of my control.
So are you looking at your next directing gig? I mean, I've seen ideas kicked around and maybe a Catwoman or Invisible Woman. Is that a thing you've already settled on or do you not know
yet? No, I haven't settled on anything. I never like to jinx anything. I'm going to get Cocaine Bear out in the world and then I'm going to take like 2 days off and then jump back in.
2 whole days. My goodness, Elizabeth, you're getting worried about where this is headed. Elizabeth Banks produced and directed Cocaine Bear. The movie is in theaters now. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. It's been a pleasure to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from Katie Gilchrist and Matt Schwartz, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.